buzzer has sounded. We are headed to overtime with William Pattison on Fox Sports Knoxville. This is Fan Run Radio.
And here we go. Hour number two on a game day. Vols and the Cox set to tip off here any moment now in Columbia. Big game. We dove into it in the first hour. We're live here in Knoxville from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. William Pattison, Dawson Wise, we appreciate you listening along with us. As the game's going on, we know a lot of people are probably going to be tuned into the game. But if you want to stick around, go ahead and do. We've got some good topics ahead of us as we talk about our most impressive players from the NFL Combine over the weekend. The NFL franchise tag deadline was yesterday. A lot of teams tagging some players. A couple guys might be moving on as a result. We'll dive into it all, and we'll talk a little bit of NBA in the end of the hour as well. We appreciate you listening along with us. We'll give updates about the game going on tonight as well throughout the hour. Let's get into it. Let's talk about the NFL Combine, which was this weekend. It took place in Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis, given the opportunity for players to prove themselves to hundreds of NFL scouts, coaches, and GMs, and people like us sitting on the couch and watching them as well. Though Caleb Williams and Drake May and Marvin Harrison opted out of the competition, there were still plenty of notable prospects that showed out. Before we get into those notable prospects that did perform well and use the opportunity, how should we view the opt-outs? Because, look, I understand the agents are the guys in the ears of these players, you know, saying, you know, we're not doing this, we're not doing that, it's not going to help you out, yada, yada, yada. These guys are trying to get paid too, you know, the agents. So the farther a guy drops, the lower their check that comes in the mail is. But Marvin Harrison Jr. is someone that I've got a little bit of a bone to pick with. And I'm not saying it's all his doing, but Caleb Williams, Drake May, these guys at least showed up to the event. They did the interviews. They talked to people. They at least, even though they didn't go out there and throw, they at least went along with the weekend, I guess is the word. Marvin Harrison Jr. did not. Didn't even show up. And
I mean, he didn't do any public media. I can't tell you he talked to teams because I know he talked to the Arizona Cardinals.
He talked to, okay.
Yeah, the insiders all said that that Austin Fort and Gannon met with Harrison over the weekend in Indianapolis. Okay. So he was doing something. Well, it's public, yeah.
But I still don't like that he's not talking to media.
That's
and,
fair.
And because I think it shows. All right, so Greg Popovich, right? Really great coach. And back, this was in the early 2000s, he said that at San Antonio, or in San Antonio, we don't like to draft guys who are not over themselves, right? They're a little bit full of who they are. And I'm not saying this is who Marvin Harrison is. And I'm sure his agent is the one telling him to do all these things. But I don't like that a guy comes in and thinks he's a little bit better than everyone because of who he is and what he's done. And he deserves it. His resume speaks for himself. I'm not attacking his character here. I just don't like the persona he's giving off of, I'm Marvin Harrison. I don't really need to do all this. I mean, Caleb Williams at least, you know, spoke to the media. I know he's been very scrutinized over the last couple of weeks. I think he's cleaned up his act and what he says now. But I was not a big fan of Marvin Harrison, not at least speaking to the media. I think that's a given for a lot of these guys, especially these top guys. People want to hear from them where they are, where they're at. You know, not competing in the competition, you know, isn't my favorite thing. But also not participating, at least the media, it rubbed me the wrong way. Your opinion?
Yeah, on Harrison for sure. Now, obviously, you know, being in a position where my team can draft him, it's a little bit different because, you know, you do hear what the insiders say with what the, you know, the people in our shoes over there in Arizona are saying. And that's that, number one, that they met with Harrison. Number two, that it went really well. That apparently he made a very good impression on the front office, at least from what we've heard. Now, again, the only people that know are Marvin Harrison and the people in the room. So we don't really know without him coming out in public and doing any of that. So I get it, and I really don't like him not participating. I figured he would, since I'll bet all the other receivers did. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of surprised, and like he rubs you the wrong way a little bit when he's not out in public, at least like those quarterbacks were.
Yeah. It says a little bit to me. I'm a little bit full of who I am, and I'm not over myself.
No, it's fair.
And especially these teams, they're drafting players to come and join their team. They're not drafting Marvin Harrison to be, the Arizona Marvin Harrisons. It's the Arizona Cardinals. They're drafting you to become a part of this franchise and this group. If you can't get over that in yourself, that's going to be a problem. Justin Blackmon, a receiver from Oklahoma State.
Mm-hmm.
He was a guy that was very full of himself, and he didn't really participate in a lot of this stuff either. And teams did not figure out who he actually was till he got there. He was out at Oklahoma State on a Wednesday night, hanging out at the bar till 3 in the morning on a Friday night before the game till, 2 in the morning. And, that work ethic reflects itself once you get there. Everyone loves Johnny Manziel. His professionalism, quote in quotations, that didn't work out at the NFL level either. This is the opportunity to get to know who these guys are,
exactly,
hear from them, and see what they offer outside of what they can do on the field. That's why it rubs me the wrong way. I'm not attacking his character. I know his resume represents himself, and he is a top four pick. Whatever he goes, he deserves. Just rub me the wrong way. Anything to add?
No, not really. I can see why. It almost rubs me the wrong way a little bit more, considering sitting at number four, the franchise that I support has a chance to draft this guy. And if he's going to be that prima donna that comes in and is all about himself, I don't really want that on my team. I'm going to start to look at other options. I think, I'd rather have this guy that showed up, talked to the media, that did the drills, and that kind of went through the process.
Yeah. All right, now let's talk about the more I guess this is the better light of the combine, and it's the guys that competed and showed up and helped their draft stock. So we're going to go down the list, offense and defense here, talk about the most impressive guy at each position. I'll begin here with J.J. McCarthy from Michigan. He came in at 6'2.5", 219 pounds. It's a little bit bigger and thicker than expected. And he finished with a 6.82 three-cone shuttle. Or three-cone time, a really good quickness there as well. Displayed good footwork and threw a really good ball as well. I was really impressed with him. I think a lot of people view McCarthy as a guy, he was on Michigan. Michigan was loaded. They had everything, right? He didn't have to do much. Here's a key stat. On throws on third down and 6 to 10 yards to go, McCarthy last season was completed 73% of those passes for 5 touchdowns, 0 turnovers. So when the stakes were high, when he was asked to make a play, he was able to at a very efficient rate. And I think he showed this weekend that he's got a really good ball, got some really good footwork, weighed in and sized up a little bit bigger than expected. I think he was the most impressive guy.
I kind of split this into two different categories, athleticism and how they threw the ball. For athleticism, absolutely, it's J.J. McCarthy. A very good athlete. The three-cone time's the best for a quarterback in 5 years as a quarterback prospect. I didn't quite expect that out of him, I don't think.
Yeah.
So to see him come in and be that impressive as an athlete, I think that was very good. But second in throw speed, only behind Joe Milton.
Yeah.
It's 62 miles an hour. Yeah. McCarthy at 61.
Hard to beat him.
That's still impressive. And looked good in his footwork. He talked about his footwork. I thought he looked good as well in that. And I saw some of the rougher throws that kind of take away from it from the throwing side, and that's why I'm going to give the throwing edge to Penix. I thought he looked more consistent in terms of actually throwing the football. Maybe not quite as good athletically. He's not going to stand out as much for athleticism, but I thought throwing the football, he looked very good, and that's what we expected him to do. That's what we expect him to do at the next level. Could Joe Milton be a dark horse for this? I thought he had a good combine.
Yes.
A much better combine, I should say, than I think we might have expected. The big arm wowed the scouts. But even on some of the out routes by the sideline, the throws outside the numbers that he struggled with at Tennessee over the last few years, I thought he looked pretty good in those drills. I don't know.
Look, I knew he was going to do well this weekend. I mean, he does well in these situations. And I'm not hating on the guy. I was a Joe Milton supporter all season long. And I got bashed for it. When I was on here with Jake, people would call in and borderline cuss me out because I'd still be backing him. But I knew Milton would do well this weekend. No pads, no game going on. Joe Milton thrives in these situations. He had a little bit of showmanship to him, too. On that long ball throw, kind of waited a little bit longer than expected. Just see how long. A little bit of a showmanship. I loved it. But these are non-game situations. Come game time, I think his biggest flaw is how he processes a defense And when you're throwing to, you know, guys in an open space, it's a little bit different.
That's fair.
So I think Milton impressed, but I'm not surprised that he did.
Okay.
Moving on to running back now. Mine is Trey Benson from Florida State. In college, this guy went through it all. Benson tore his ACL, MCL, lateral meniscus, medial meniscus, and hamstring. I sound like a doctor here, Campbell Clinic. But in the combine, he comes out with a 4.39 40-yard dash, a 3.35-inch vert, and a 10-foot-2 broad jump. So the question on this guy was, okay, he's battled all these injuries. He was the main bell cow for Florida State last year. But what does he look like testing-wise? Is he able to test as good as some of the other guys who haven't battled these injuries? And he did. One of the fastest backs, tested very well. Impressive day for him. I thought he had a lot to prove. Was very impressed with Benson. Jalen Wright's another guy. I know it's a little bit biased, but from being from Tennessee, but I thought he did really well. I thought it was funny how pissed off he was that he got a 4.38 in the 40.
Yeah, I noticed that.
You know, he was pissed off, but he did really well. That's a good time. I think he was very impressive as well. But Trey Benson, with everything he's been through, and comparing to the other guys, Benson was my most impressive.
I think you give Wright a look as well. 4.38 over an 11-foot broad jump is what did they say? That tied for the longest overall broad jump for a running back ever in the combine. So that, you know, impressive athletic stats. Mm-hmm. Thought he looked good in what he did. I'm going to give the nod to Isaac Garendo from Louisville.
Yes.
Very, very good athlete. And a guy that I, you know, had on my radar, but wasn't the guy I was like, that is the surefire number one back in the class. I think he made a case to be the number one back in the class. Yeah. Runs a 4.33, 41.5-inch vert, 10-foot-9 broad jump. Incredible athlete.
Yeah.
The selling point for me, which gives him the nod over a guy like Benson, was number one, his footwork, and number two, his ability to receive out of the backfield.
Yeah.
He is apparently a converted receiver. I actually didn't know that. I thought he was a running back to begin with. They actually moved him from receiver. So when you get him with the running back skill set, you add on that he was a receiver before.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an electric dual-threat guy, mm-hmm. a guy you can use as a big-time cog in the offense, kind of like an Isaiah Pacheco almost in Kansas City. And that's what gives him the nod for me. It's just the fact that he can do both.
Yeah. All right, wide receiver, Xavier Leggett. Athleticism on full display, racking up a very impressive relative athletic score in RAS. Got a 9.92. That's 24th among wide receivers since the system began in 1987. Leggett at South Carolina, we saw him. It happened to be in a really tough game for us, play really big. But his 40 time, a 4.39, a 40-inch vert, very athletic guy. And the comparison a couple of these guys were doing on the combine when we were watching it was to Deebo Samuel. But this guy has very similar build, but is faster than Deebo Samuel was by 0.9 seconds. Deebo Samuel ran a 4.48. Leggett runs a 4.39. I know a lot of people were wowed with the Texas guys, Adonna Mitchell and Worthy, and how great they looked. But Xavier Leggett, I think, was a guy that impressed a lot of people and kind of went a little bit under the radar, most impressive for me.
I think it would have been Worthy had he done drills. He decided not to do the route running drills. Imagine he'll wait till the Texas Pro Day to do that. For me, of the guys that did route running drills, I'm going to give the nod to Ladd McConkey from Georgia.
Really? Okay.
He looked really impressive.
Yeah.
As a route runner, saw some comps to Cooper Kupp in terms of his route running ability. Ran a 4.39 40. I did not know that guy had 4.3 speed.
Yeah.
He does not look like he has 4.3 speed when he's playing on the field.
That white boy can run.
So, but nonetheless, impressive 40 time, wowed me. But his route running is what gets it. I mean, just an elite level route runner, a guy that's going to immediately translate to the next level. I mean, you can't teach that kind of route running. You know, you can teach a guy a system, but you can't teach that kind of natural, you know, change of direction, natural route running. We knew that guy was probably going to translate well to a pro system, but now especially, he had a really great weekend. Looked very good, very sure hands as well. Which is, again, why I kind of mentioned the comp to Cooper Kupp. Mm-hmm. I think that's who he reminds me of. I think it's going to translate really well to the pro level.
Yeah, quick score update for the Vols and Gamecocks game. Vols lead 14-10 with 12:38 remaining. Let's see if I can get any numbers here. You got Dalton Connect with 5, 2 of 3 from the floor. Okay. Jonas Adu with 4, 2 of 4 from the floor. Zakai Ziegler with 2, but 3 rebounds. So, way to get on the glass there. Now let's move over to tight end, and this was an interesting one because obviously Brock Bowers is going to be the main guy everyone's looking at, but Theo Johnson from Penn State, 6'6", 260. Ran a 4.58 40. A 39.5-inch vert, 10-foot broad jump, and secured an unofficial 9.99 RAS score. That's the relative athletic score I just mentioned earlier, out of a possible 10.00. Johnson ranked second out of 1,105 tight ends from 1987 to 2024 in that stat. He ranked second out of them all. He's also the only tight end to welsh over 255 pounds, run a sub 4.6 40, and pass a vertical over 39 inches. A lot of people look at this guy on paper from last year, and they're like, it's not that appealing. 32 receptions, 325 yards. I get it. That's not wowing anyone. But Penn State played in a system, and this guy played all over the field. He played as a backfield blocker, played in the slot, played wide. He was in a lot of positions. So I think for him, that was a very, very impressive combine. Put himself on the map for a lot of people. Most impressive for me.
That's who I had written down, too. It's Theo Johnson. It's one of the ones we're going to agree on here. I saw some serious athleticism, 4.58, 40, like you mentioned, for a guy of his size is insane speed for a 260 frame. 39.5-inch vert, 10-foot-5 broad jump, really great athlete. It's going to be a dynamic threat in one of these, you know, West Coast offenses because that's where the NFL is going.
Yeah.
This is the kind of tight end, the prototype tight end that you want, like a George Kittle. You know, that kind of guy where he's a little bit bigger frame but can get out there and run, get out there and make plays and be a good athlete. Jimmy Graham comes to mind. Evan Engram comes to mind. Guys like that can get out there and make dynamic plays. That's going to translate really well to the next level.
Yeah, I like Evan Engram, Jacksonville Jaguar.
There you go.
All right, so now anyone else that stood out on the offensive side, I'm going to go to Troy Fontanu from Washington on the offensive line. Coming in, a lot of questions about his arm length. Is he a guy that's good enough or long enough to be a guard? Should he be a tackle? Where should he be placed? I think he won the day before he even walked out and did drills. Measured in at a 34.5-inch arm length, which is very, very good, exactly what you want. 6'3", 317, cruised during the on-field drills. I think he could play offensive tackle or offensive guard wherever you want to put him. I think he had a very impressive day for a lot of doubts coming in.
I mean, I have to go with the obvious one. Joe Alt of Notre Dame, I think, cemented himself. There were kind of questions between him and Fashanu of Penn State of who was going to be the number one offensive tackle.
Yeah.
I don't think the questions exist anymore. I think the biggest thing was being 6'9", 321, huge guy, very tall for playing the offensive line position.
I mean,
wondering, you know, would he be able to move around at 6'9", 321, be able to move and pull in pass blocking, and he did, and he excelled at it. Really did well in those drills, worked well in run and pass blocking. He's going to be elite at the next level at the tackle position, and he'll translate to whoever drafts him, likely at this point, inside the top 10. I think he cemented himself in that spot.
Why can't I be 6'9", you know, 300 pounds?
Exactly.
Why am I 5'10"?
And be able to move like he does off the tackle position.
Gosh, well, I swear they make these people out of a lab. I really do. All right, let's move over to the defensive side now, and we begin with the defensive line. Mine is Byron Murphy from Texas. I think this was the most impressive guy of the weekend for me. I know he's already very highly touted, but the way he moves is just incredible. 6 foot, 300 pounds, finished top three in the 40-yard dash, top three in the 10-yard split, top two in the vert, and top six in the broad jump out of the defensive line position. The movement at his size is seriously jaw-dropping. I mean, it looked like he was doing ballet in these drills, just tap, 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 weaving around. Incredible for a guy that's 6 foot, 300 pounds.
Yeah.
He should not be able to move like that.
No, he should not.
His agility, his movement, his ability to read the play at Texas, it's all incredible. I think he's one of the best prospects out there. I do want to give an honorable mention to Braden Fisk from Florida State, a guy that is a very unique size and build at the defensive line position, but he killed it this weekend as well in all the drills. I think he did himself a lot of favors as well in terms of where he stacks up now on the big board. Your defensive line.
Good segue. Braden Fisk of Florida State's who I had written down, I thought had one of the most impressive weekends of any defensive player. First in the 40, first in the vert, first in the broad jump, and I believe first in the shuttle as well for the defensive lineman. Really, really good athlete. 4.78, 40, 33.5 vert, 9.9 broad jump at his size is impressive. Explosive off the ball. Real got a nose for the football kind of guy. You know, able to close down on a play, really able to get a nice first step into the backfield especially, and find the ball. Find the ball carrier, which is what you need to do, which is what these elite guys do. Guys like, you know, Bosa, they can get through a block and find the ball. They're always on the ball. And so I think he showed that he can do that, close down on a play, and really made himself a nice statement.
Yeah, moving over to the edge on the defensive line, I've got Dallas Turner from Alabama. And, you know, some listeners were like, oh, another Alabama guy. But he put on an absolute show. Blazing fast 40 of 4.46 seconds. That's in the 97th percentile at that position. He also had a high jump of 40.5 inches in his vertical. Very good numbers there. 10'7" broad jump. That's second among edge rushers in that group as well. 6'2", 247. Turner locked himself in my opinion, as one of the top edge rushers in this class. We saw what he did at Alabama. We know how impactful he was because we saw him a couple times where he was making plays against the Vols. But I think he's very impressive, and he was the most impressive guy for me at the edge.
Again, I don't think we're going to disagree on this one. I have Dallas Turner as well. I mean, this dude is just everything you could possibly want in a pass rusher. Everything you could want in a guy that's going to find the football, find the explosive play. And, heck, like you said, did it against us. I believe he forced a fumble this year. I can't remember in that game against us.
I think it was on Milton.
Recovered one last year in 2022.
He did.
Which he ran into the end zone for what many of us thought was the game-winning touchdown.
No, we won.
Nose for the football. But put on a show. Yeah. A really good athlete. 4.46, 40 is nuts for a guy at 250 pounds.
Yeah.
His vertical good, broad jump good. Good on ball, good off ball as well. If you need him to be, can do both. Which again, in some of these defensive schemes, we see some guys that aren't as good off the ball being used off the ball, and they're just not as good in that position. I think Hassan Reddick in Philadelphia is one we've talked about on here before, where they tried to use him in coverage and it just doesn't work.
No.
Turner's one you can do that with.
Yeah,
has the athleticism to get out there and cover, and he looked really good. And yeah, like you said, put on a show and locked in himself as a high first round pick.
Yeah. All right, moving over to linebacker now, Peyton Wilson from NC State burst onto the scene with a 4.43 40-yard dash at 6'3", 233. Very impressive guy. This is a fifth-year guy out of NC State. He graded out as a 90th percentile prospect in coverage and tackling, according to Pro Football Focus, PFF. In coverage, he graded as a 90.4, and tackling a 90.6, so very even on both sides there. Wilson's 9.81 RAS score makes him an intriguing linebacker option for a lot of teams. I think this guy was not on too many people's radar coming in. You have a day like this, you get on some big boards, you draw some attention. That's exactly what Payne Wilson did, my most impressive guy.
Yeah, I should have written more players down. We're on the same page here.
All good, all
good. Payne Wilson, NC State, was mine as well. A guy that – this is that kind of player that comes out of college, that really gritty, hard-nosed linebacker that's going to get in the league and be a leader. Be a guy that other guys look to make the big play.
Yeah.
I think that's who this guy looks like coming out of the combine. I mean, the 40 time, obviously, is going to be what wows. But even at NC State last year, when you watch them play, when they needed a big defensive play, when they were getting a big defensive play, almost all the time, it was Peyton Wilson.
Yeah.
Almost every single time, took a ton of snaps. You know, that's the kind of guy that you want on your team.
Yeah.
You want on your defense. The kind of guy that can lead a defense and always make the big play. So, yeah, it's Peyton Wilson for me as well.
Yeah. All right, now moving over to defensive back, and I've got Quinyon Mitchell from Toledo. Is that who you got to?
That's who I've got to.
Okay. Well, I'll give my little piece on Quinyon. I've got another one as well I want to highlight.
Okay.
But Quinyon Mitchell, I think, wowed everyone this weekend. A 4.33 40-yard dash. Great agility and quickness in the drills. He has the ability, when you go look at his tape, ability to cover the vertical routes and the ones in the middle of the field. I told my friend this weekend when we were watching it, I said, if this guy had a cursive A on the side of his helmet, well, I guess they don't wear they have the numbers on the side of their helmet. But if he had a cursive A on the, I guess, the chest piece they wear, this guy would be the number one guy. And I think he's already kind of encroaching on that position already. But I think if he played at Alabama, a lot more people would be on this guy. I thought Quinyon Mitchell was really, really impressive, and you say as well.
Well, yeah, Quinyon Mitchell, I mean, coming out of the Senior Bowl, I think is where people started to realize that, hey, whoa, who is this guy?
Yeah.
Because he played at Toledo, not a lot of eyes got on him, and all of a sudden he plays well in the Senior Bowl, and you're like, whoa, okay, this guy's an elite athlete. He's going to be really good at that position. Looked great in passing drills, I thought, in coverage. And obviously the athletic stats, again, are going to wow. So, yeah, good to see him do well. I think he's going to be probably – might be the number one corner off the board at this point. I think he may have cemented himself into that. And then real quick, again, maybe not most impressive, but do want to point out, I thought Kamal Haddon had some good moments this weekend, especially in some of those pass coverage drills, breaking on the ball. His footwork I thought was really, really good.
Yeah.
And that's a guy who we've all had our gripes with over the last couple of years, but really has set himself up well, I think, to be in a decent draft position for some of these teams looking for a guy that's, again, going to go out, have the potential to be kind of a sleeper pick at corner. I thought he looked really good this weekend.
Yeah, and so I thought he looked good as well. Looked like he got a haircut.
I
saw him. I was like, is that
new
Kamal?
Look, Kamal Haddon.
Is that Kamal Haddon? I was like, oh, that doesn't even look like him. but good look. Look, he's freshening up in front of the, you know, he's doing, look, he's meeting with the media, meeting with the guys, I guess meeting with the teams as well, looking fresh. I like it. Nate Wiggins was another guy I wanted to touch on. Now, he got hurt in the combine. I think pulled his hamstring
his
or
hamstring.
Something. But he ran a 4.28. I thought that speed was really impressive as well. And another guy who really impressed me, not even in the drills, was Terrion Arnold from Alabama. He had a moment when all the players were done. They interviewed Terrion on the broadcast, and they were talking, you know, about his day, and they moved on and to talking about his mom. And he had a 30-second, 45-second, just, I guess, clip, if you will, of him just talking about the impact his mom made on him and how he wants to make her proud and all these things. I mean, the camera was dead set, zoomed in on his face. It was like something out of a Hollywood scene. Very, very impressed with his character. I think those type of people are the ones that succeed in this league, that are not full of themselves, that think about their upbringing and how they got here. He's a great prospect on the field, but I think he also won a lot of people over with the character he has as well. I wanted to mention his name too. Any other guys that stood out throughout the weekend you want to touch on?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head.
Okay,
anyway.
Yeah, same here. All right, when we come back, we'll talk about the franchise tagging in the NFL. A couple of winners, a couple of losers. We'll dive into it on the other side. You're listening to Overtime on Fox Sports Knoxville.
Hey guys, it's Logan Quinton from the 920 Podcast and Fan Run Varsity Spotlight. Yes, it's the Cookie Man, and I'm here to tell you about something sweet. Crumbl Cookies is the fastest growing cookie company in the nation. After only 4 years, 500 plus stores are in operation in 50 states, with many more in build out. Just a reminder to go see the Crumbl crew at Parkside Drive or Clinton Highway. And please, come check out the new location in Maryville, 1765 West Broadway, Suite C.
Making a better vodka soda ain't rocket science. You just gotta start with a better vodka. And then voila, you get a White Claw vodka soda. Your taste buds are about to get a PhD in deliciousness. JB Smooth only drinks vodka soda made with the world's smoothest vodka.
Try the all-new White Claw vodka soda. Pick up a variety pack of their four delicious flavors. Only 100 calories, 4.5% alcohol, and 2 grams of sugar. White Claw vodka soda. Please drink responsibly.
eBay Motors here for the ride. Elbow grease and a whole lot of love transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive entirely its own. LED headlights, spoilers, whatever you need. eBay Motors has it all at affordable prices. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride every time. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to bring home the win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
I was afraid to cut the cord, but once I did, I couldn't believe it took so long to do it. Paying too much for my cable bill had become a bad habit. I either wasn't getting what I wanted or never knew where to find any of my favorite shows until it was too late. Plus, the prices just kept going up. Thankfully, I discovered a new way to watch, called Philo. For just $25 a month, I can catch all my favorite shows on networks like BET, MTV, and TLC. It even has Nickelodeon for my kids. I can watch anytime I want, anywhere I want. Plus, Philo lets me have up to 3 streams at once, so everyone can watch what they want at the same time. Throw in the unlimited DVR that saves all my favorites for up to a year, and this really is the best deal in TV. I just wish I hadn't waited so long. Sound too good to be true? Well, try it out for yourself, and you'll see why people who love TV love Philo. Go to philo.tv, that's philo.tv, and start your 7-day free trial now.
Life insurance. Why are you putting it off? Can't afford it? Too much hassle? Think you don't need it? There's lots of excuses for putting off life insurance. But if you weren't there, who would pay the mortgage and other bills? With Ethos, you could be covered in 10 minutes and boom, family protected. Ethos, fast and easy online term life insurance. Up to $2 million in coverage with no medical exam. Some policies as low as a dollar a day. Answer a few health questions and get your free quote at getethos.com. That's getethos.com.
Back here on Overtime, talking the NFL. Quick score update. Dawson, you've got it live.
Yeah, I'm trying to watch it. 22-19, Vols have the basketball. It is 24, hopefully. Josiah's going to the line to shoot two. 22-19, Vols, 5-18 to go in the first half.
All right, well, that's good. Good news there. All right, Tag, you're it. It's the franchise tag in the NFL. The NFL kicked off its roster building season Tuesday with the deadline for teams to use the franchise tag. 8 players received the franchise tag while 1 got the transition tag. The deadline held spur action with others as wide receiver Mike Evans and tight end Dalton Schultz were among those who agreed to contract extensions, while teams like Seattle and Jacksonville began shedding cap space by releasing prominent players. And we saw the Bills today have a garage sale as well.
Yeah.
So talking about the franchise tag deadline passing, let's do the winners and losers. We'll begin with the winners. Who are your winners?
I've got 3. The first one is Saquon Barkley.
Okay.
He gets to explore free agency and try to find a different situation where you're not going to be losing 13 games a year. You actually get to go contend. I think Dallas is probably his best option for that. I know we've kind of talked about Philadelphia yesterday, Detroit yesterday, Minnesota as well coming open. But go find an option where you can still be the number one guy and still produce and get the ball and get the touches you want, but also to contend. So Saquon Barkley is the first one for me. The second one is T. Higgins in Cincinnati. He gets the tag, which I think many of us kind of expected not to. Some of us may not have wanted him to.
Sure.
With the chance of him coming to Tennessee in the offseason. He gets the tag. By getting it, I think he gets an opportunity to raise his value in free agency. I'm not sure he would have gotten the contract that he would have wanted in this offseason, perhaps. Instead, now, I think what I saw was he matches his career earnings with just the franchise tag this year. Mm-hmm. It's a big boost for him. Gets a chance to, again, after being injured last year especially, play a whole season and increase his value. So I think to get an extension next year, I think this will profit him. The last one for me is Chris Jones in Kansas City. Does not get tagged. It allows him to really cash in Kansas City or become probably the most coveted defensive free agent in what? I mean, 5 years, 10
yeah.
years?
Mm-hmm.
So Jones, for me, again, huge, huge, huge level free agent and now in the market for a massive extension after what proved to be arguably his best year of his career last year.
Yeah. All right, my winners, we'll begin with Baker Mayfield. Now, it wasn't like he was going to get tagged, but now that he is able to get past this, he will be among the top 2 quarterbacks in this free agency, coming off a really good year with Tampa, probably looking in the $40 million range. I think if he's looking to cash in on a payday, he's glad he's not getting tagged. Not that he was supposed to, but I think just clearing that benchmark is big for him. Running backs in general getting past the franchise tag. Josh Jacobs, Saquon Barkley, Tony Pollard, all unburdened by a second franchise tag this time around. None of them coming off any major injuries. All of them are 27 or younger. All produced at least 1,100 yards last season. Now they have the opportunity to go test the free agent waters and see what they can get. Saquon Barkley, we talked about him yesterday. I think this is a big mistake from the Giants. You know, I don't think Daniel Jones is a good quarterback, and ripping the only good thing about this offense away from this team is not a good decision, in my opinion. Tony Pollard, I think, is an interesting one to watch out for. I think if you ask Cowboys fans during the season, would Tony Pollard be coming back? I don't think many would have said he would. But I think now with the running back market the way it is right now, I think he could go on a smaller deal and return to the Cowboys, and that might not be good for him. But it'll be interesting to see what the market is.
Right.
I guess is what I'm saying here. And Josh Jacobs is a guy that, you know, had a holdout last year with the Raiders, ends up playing for them last year, doesn't get the tag. He's got some ability and some flexibility. So there are a couple of intriguing options now in the market with these guys not getting tagged that goes along with Derrick Henry, DeAndre Swift, Austin Eckler, if you still want to entertain him these days. Looks like he's got bricks on his feet when he's running. But I think those guys were the biggest winners. Let's see. I guess Michael Pittman Jr. is a winner.
Yes.
Because he got paid. Now, the other side of that's one of my losers. But Michael Pittman Jr. gets paid a high dollar to be franchise tag, so congrats to him on cashing in on a payday. Now, let's go to the losers now. Who are your losers?
I have three again. I'm actually, you know what, I'm going to start with Baker Mayfield. And here's
really?
Why.
Okay.
I'm not sure that he's going to get that kind of money at this point.
Okay.
I'm not sure any franchise, you know, is based off 1 year of postseason success is going to say that's a $40 million quarterback. I think perhaps he's earned it in a way, but I think if it, you know, you get guaranteed that money if Tampa Bay puts the franchise tag on you. I think it was $38 million I think he was going to get on a franchise tag from what I saw. I don't know if he'll get that money, and because it's not like a surefire, well, Minnesota's going to go pay him $40 million, I don't think you can consider him a winner. I think it would have been better off if he had gotten tagged by the Bucks. My second one is Calvin Ridley in Jacksonville. He led the Jags in receiving this past year, coming off a year where he didn't play because of the gambling situation. Probably the best receiving threat in that room all year, even on and off, dealing with some injuries and things like that and some off performances, still led that room. And I'm really surprised to see him not get that tag after that performance. And it's another guy like Baker Mayfield, I just don't know if he's going to get that money anywhere else because of taking the year off and all the situation around that. And then the off performances last year, he had several games where he just was non-existent at times last year. So for me, again, a loser I think would have been better off with a franchise tag. The last one, perhaps my biggest loser of this entire process, is Brian Burns in Carolina. This is getting to the point where he, I think, has every right to be frustrated with the Panthers franchise for not extending him. At this point, you know, now you have to try to work a long-term extension. You have less than a week to do that after many of us, myself included, I thought he would get one last year.
Yeah.
Did not. Now doesn't even get a franchise tag. You don't know where the future lies with him now. Are they going to pony up the money to pay him? Is he going to have to go somewhere else? His production, in my opinion, had earned him at least a tag, if not a massive extension. Now I don't know if he's going to get either of them in Carolina. Puts him in a serious limbo. He's probably the biggest loser of this to me.
Yeah, my losers will begin with Josh Allen and Brian Burns. Josh Allen, the pass rusher, Josh Allen, and a member of the Jacksonville Jaguars, my team. Two of the best pass rushers aren't going anywhere. You know, this was an opportunity for them to cash in on some extensions or maybe test the free agent waters because no one's going to want to give up two first-round picks for these guys. And Montez Sweat is probably the most notable pass rusher as of late that got a big contract. He got 4 years, $98 million. Burns and Allen would have been in the avenue for that kind of money, possibly nine figures. Both of these guys get tagged. Now, it's a fair amount of money, you know, $24 million apiece. That's, no one's complaining about that. But these guys were looking to cash in on a couple of really big seasons they've had in a row. And both of these guys get hit with the tag here. Josh Allen and the Jaguars were not able to reach an agreement on a contract extension, so they tag him. I don't know all the details on Brian Burns. I don't know. I'm sure there were extension talks. They must have stalled out as well, similar to Jacksonville. But in terms of Josh Allen and Brian Burns, this is a tough day for them. They were looking to cash in on some big money. My second loser, receiver needy teams. Teams looking to add that one more big-time receiver. Mike Evans gets the big extension. Michael Pittman gets tagged by the Colts. Now, and I've got it pulled up here, you're looking at Calvin Ridley, Marquise Brown, Gabe Davis, Darnell Mooney, Tyler Boyd, Odell Beckham Jr., and Curtis Samuel as your top wide receiver options. A couple serviceable
guys. A
couple
good pieces in there.
Couple serviceable guys, but and T. Higgins as well, another guy that got tagged. You mentioned him. No longer T. Higgins, no longer Michael Pittman Jr., no longer Mike Evans available. That takes out your probably top three guys that would have been. So receiver needy teams, a loss for them. My other loser, the Indianapolis Colts. Putting $21 million on the books for a wide receiver is a pretty big price tag. Now, I know Michael Pittman is very special. That's a very big franchise tag for a wide receiver, and especially one that I would not put on the same level as a T. Higgins, and I would not put him on the same level as a Mike Evans in terms of the money they're bringing in. Pittman's a great receiver. Anthony Richardson, a guy that's going to get his first real chance next season, needs a couple of reliable targets. I just thought franchise tagging a receiver at that price is a little too high, and that's my biggest gripe there. So those are our losers, winners from the franchise tag deadline passing. Now, another storyline that kind of comes out of this is the Vikings and their quarterback situation. The Vikings have until next week to secure Cousins before his contract voids and his $28.5 million dead cap hit is stuck on the books for the 2024 season. At this point, extending Cousins might require a change in approach from ownership in the front office. If that doesn't happen, a new question will emerge as the offseason headliner: who will be the Vikings' next quarterback? So with the passing of the franchise tag deadline, Baker Mayfield not tagged. He's one of the top guys out there. I guess Russell Wilson is among the top guys out there as well, maybe, asterisk mark. Who could – oh, excuse me. With the deadline passing, could the Vikings find a different quarterback?
I mean, they could. Like you said, some other options, the most notable of which being Baker Mayfield. I think that's probably who they'll target now. Without getting Cousins back, I think Baker would be your number one option, and I don't think that would be a bad option, honestly, because of the postseason success. You give him some weapons. Maybe that works out in Minnesota starting next year. Beyond that, I mean, does Russell Wilson really garner you a look? I don't think it's not a long-term solution. It's not a guy I want to pay that much money to be the starting guy at this point in his career. I can't really justify it. The wild card, this is probably not going to happen, but hey, why not? That's what we're doing here is hypotheticals, right?
Sure.
Does Minnesota try to trade in the division for Justin Fields?
I knew that was coming.
Because we've talked about him potentially going to Atlanta. We've talked about him potentially going to Pittsburgh. With Chicago still, I'd imagine, leaning towards Caleb Williams at this point at number one.
Yeah.
Well, why not? I mean, yeah, you probably don't want to trade him in the division. But, I mean, depending on what Minnesota could give you in return, why not at least test that water if it doesn't work with Atlanta? I think Atlanta's still number one destination. But now that that job's come open in Minnesota, maybe you give it a look.
Yeah, Cousins, I think his most likely destination, if he is to leave, would be Atlanta.
That's the other thing, too.
So, you know, that would be Justin Fields' top target and the Bears' top target to unload Fields. So then, do you throw Justin Fields in that offense? You know, it'd be – I don't know. Does that work? I don't know. I can't envision – Justin Fields there for some reason. Atlanta just seems so sleek.
Atlanta and seems
feels
so...
feels like a natural fit for him. Because you've got a lot of young guys around there, and Bijan Robinson and Drake London and Kyle Pitts. It feels like a better nucleus. And look, you've got Jordan Addison and Justin Jefferson over in Minnesota. But if I'm Justin Jefferson, I might be trying to get out of here if you're bringing him Fields.
I don't know. I just think if you're going to trade him, I mean, he'll want to go somewhere where he has weapons and you have two already built in. Maybe assign Saquon Barkley at that point. Maybe you draft one of these running backs. And all of a sudden you've got a young core there too. I don't know. I don't think they'll do it again. But
Yeah. Talking out loud.
Can't help but at least think about that it's maybe a possibility if Kirk goes to Atlanta or if Atlanta finds another solution or something doesn't work out. I feel like it could be an option.
I think Fields to Minnesota is a better option than Fields to Pittsburgh.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And what's their O'Connell? Yeah.
Vegas could work too, potentially.
Well, no, I was trying to think of the Vikings head coach name.
Oh,
That's O'Connell, right?
I think it is. Yeah, yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
And O'Connell's an offensive-minded guy.
Yes.
So that's a good spot to go to. Be interesting to see how that team uses him. I mean, we had Astro Dobbs come in and play.
Have astronaut.
Have a little bit of a good stretch there. So, you know, maybe anyone can come in there and have some success. I mean, you can get any better than Nick Mullins. Is that right? Nick Mullins?
Nick Mullins, Jaren Hall.
Jaren Hall.
Also took snaps up there last year.
Yeah,
so.
That was
weird.
That was a mess, especially when Cousins went down. If he goes, I think Cousins, if he were to leave, Atlanta's the best destination. Yeah. They've got a good defense. They've got a lot of offensive pieces that they can use to his weaponry. Kind of seems like a little bit of a Matt Ryan kind of deal.
Yeah, a little bit.
You know, a little bit of a more true pocket passer and can get it out to these guys. I'd see a connection there if they were to do that. I mean, I think Justin Fields' best option would be Minnesota. It's interesting how this week and the draft also kind of tie into what Minnesota will do at quarterback and where they go from there. So that'll be something to keep our eye on as we continue on. All right, when we come back from overtime, we've got the Mavs. They're struggling right now. We were just giving them credit here 2 weeks ago. Now the roads have turned. We'll be right back here on Overtime to discuss.
Ever been the coach who realized the team's gear just wasn't up to par? Well, if I'm being honest, that was me. Just a downright irresponsible and plain bad coach. Then SM Athletics changed the game. I want you to picture this. I walk into their store, a coach with a vision. SM Athletics didn't just see a coach. They saw a team's potential. And they delivered custom uniforms so striking. Our team's spirit soared. From cutting-edge apparel to top-notch equipment, SM Athletics transformed our presence. No more unreliable online orders or envying the other team's style. SM Athletics stands for quality, design, and on-time delivery every time. Coaches, elevate your team with SM Athletics. Call 865-966-3434 or visit smathletics.com. Get the best for your team, delivered right and on time. So, elevate your team's game by contacting SM Athletics today.
Are you tired of the same boring workouts that don't get you the results that you want? Check out HotWorks. With infrared light therapy and personalized wellness options, you'll be able to get the perfect workout every time. With the hot yoga or any of the other isometric options at HotWorks, you'll feel the detoxification right away. Hop on over to 10839 Hardin Valley Road or visit any of the other Knoxville locations to get started on your personalized journey.
A brand built in Tennessee and born from the love of the game. Inward Half revolutionizes golfing comfort. Crafted by a former pro and dedicated enthusiast just like you, our luxury performance wear guarantees you stay cool and comfortable through every swing and every day. We're not just a brand. We've set out to create a lifestyle for those who understand that impeccable style and premium performance are a hole-in-one. Enjoy the walk-in with Inward Half.
The superbly versatile all-electric EQB from Mercedes-Benz, a compact SUV that's full of big surprises. An optional fold-out third row offers luxurious comfort for up to 7 occupants. And almost 24 cubic feet of cargo space means this compact SUV is big enough to handle anything you can throw at it or in it. You can set the tone any way you like with 64 color customizable ambient lighting throughout. And just like every other Mercedes-Benz EV, the EQB features the very latest generation MBUX voice-activated tech. So whether you want to set a new destination, change the tunes, or tune up the heat, all you have to say is, hey, Mercedes, this vehicle's all electric, the feeling's all Mercedes. Test drive the EQB today at your local dealer or learn more at mbusa.com/EQB. That's mbusa.com/EQB.
All right, back here on Overtime, rounding out hour number 2 in our Wednesday night edition of Overtime. Couple score updates with Dawson.
Yeah, basketball up 35-24 at the break in Columbia, an 11-2 run by the Vols to end the half. Big three by Dalton Connect late in the first half as well. He's got 14 at the break, on pace for that 25-30-point number that we talked about in hour number one. Baseball has also just taken a 2-1 lead over Southern Indiana in the sixth. Xander Seacrest went 5 2/3, one run given up, but a career-high 10 strikeouts for him tonight. Great effort for him. He was lifted for Derek Schaefer before the Vols got on the board with a Christian Moore home run to tie the game and a Dalton Bargo sack fly to score Blake Burke. The Vols had the lead 2-1 there in the sixth at Lindsey Nelson.
Good stuff from the Diamond Vols taking on the Screaming Eagles. It sounds like a roller coaster.
It does.
Is that a roller coaster?
I'm sure it is somewhere.
I know there's the Wild Eagle at Dollywood.
I'm sure there's one that's called the Screaming Eagles. There has to be.
Yeah.
Great mascot. Great name for a team.
Yeah, I'd love to see the actual mascot. I'll look that up before we leave today just to see if they actually have a Screaming Eagle mascot. All right, let's dive into the NBA real quick before we head out. The Mavs, they're struggling. It was all good just a week ago, and the Dallas Mavericks had been flying high with a 7-game win streak bolstered by trade deadline acquisitions that seemed to mesh perfectly with their superstar duo of Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving. They beat the Oklahoma City Thunder before the All-Star break, the Phoenix Suns after it. They had hard-earned attention, and they deserved it. Now, after Tuesday's 137-120 defeat to the Indiana Pacers, its fifth loss in six games, Dallas has entered a free fall that threatens its season. It warranted profound questions about this team and where it's headed. Since the All-Star break, Dallas has the league's worst defense, and it's not even close. The team's 126 points allowed per 100 possessions is almost 4 points worse than the Washington Wizards. And that team's led by Jordan Looney Tunes Poole. I always used to call him that. He's such a goofball. Were the trades at the deadline not good enough?
I don't even know if it's that, because I really liked what they did. I think we all did. We liked what they did at the deadline to get better defensively, to get better offensively, you know, get that kind of forward that can score. They got that with Washington. They got a good piece in Gafford as well. It's less that to me and more just I don't think they had enough before the deadline, no matter what they did.
Yeah,
I don't think this was a team that was going to contend for the West even with their deadline moves. It was more just, you know, if they'd been in a better spot before they made those moves, I think we would be talking about a different team right now. They were just, you know, set back from the start. I like what they did at the deadline. I still like what they did at the deadline. Something's just not clicking that wasn't clicking even before they made those moves.
I think their problem is I don't think their roster from top to bottom is built the right way.
No.
If you're going to have Luka Doncic be who Luka Doncic is, I think you have to model what the Houston Rockets did when they had James Harden. They went out and played small ball and put everyone out on the perimeter. Let's just watch James Harden do what he does, and let's just play five out. Let's put five shooters on the floor that we know can win games. And it's a live and die kind of style of basketball. But I think the combo of Kyrie and Luka does not work, and I still stay firm with that. I think you can get great individual performances from them. But I think you're losing a lot of money on guys you could use at other positions to fill out your roster a little bit better on a guy like Kyrie, who's very expensive and is also ball dominant and is next to a guy in Luka Doncic who's ball dominant. Now, their defense has been the main problem, and you might be saying, well, William, how are they getting any better at defense by getting smaller and getting just a bunch of three-point shooters? Well, I think their offense has now been kind of shelled. A lot of teams have kind of figured out how this team plays, and it's not hard to because you know who's getting the ball every possession, and when they can't space the floor correctly, they're not able to score as efficiently as they need to, and as a result, they get beat down on the defensive side of the ball because the opposing offenses have a huge advantage. Luka and Kyrie are not great defenders. They never have been. And I think when your leaders are like that, you've got to be able to find a way to get guys on the roster that you can kind of use as a utility knife, like a Dylan Brooks, like an OG Anunoby, guys that can defend the other team's best player. They don't have that on this team. It's not that the trade deadline wasn't good enough, because I did like what they did, but I think it's just the roster shape-up you have on this team. I think it's more than just what you did at the deadline. I think it started when you re-signed Kyrie Irving. Really, it started when you traded for the guy.
Yeah.
So going back to this defense, Dallas has allowed 10.6 corner threes per game this season, the league's fifth most, which has leapt to 11.4, fourth most, since the trade deadline. The Mavericks weren't punished for allowing those shots during the seven-game win streak. Since the losses began, though, opponents are hitting about half of them now. So their defense on the perimeter is not great, and who's on the perimeter usually? Your guards and Kyrie and Luka. Where should the Mavs' defensive issues be pointed? Because I think it starts with number 77.
I think it does, too. I mean, those are the guys that, like you said, are out there, your first line of defense when those guys are out there ball handling, especially when those best players have the basketball in their hands. So I think you probably got to start there, hold your stars accountable, right? I mean, I think that's step number one in acknowledging, number one, that it's a problem because you're not going to win many games. 126 points in 100 possessions is, I mean, that's a mind-boggling number.
Yeah.
You're not going to win many games giving up that many points, so start there. I mean, you're not going to just say, "Well, it's Luka." You know, he's Luka. No, you got to hold him accountable, and try to just shore some of this up because you're not. Again, you're just not going to be very successful getting up those kind of numbers.
No, you're not. All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up here on Overtime. We will be back tomorrow to wrap up the Vols and Gamecocks. That game is currently at the half. We'll be here tomorrow to wrap or talk about that one. Oh, you're not going to be here. You'll be. Tell everyone where you're going to be.
So as a member of the band the last few years, being a student at UT, you get an opportunity to do the pep bands for the basketball.
Yeah.
And I've gotten to do the women's for the past 3 years. You know, didn't know how I'd like it, but got hooked with it. We get to travel with the team, so heading out tomorrow to join them in Greenville. We take on Kentucky at 2:15. Winner gets Alabama on Friday. Should be a fun weekend. Hoping for some good stuff from the Lady Vols.
Lady Vols need it. They need to rack up a couple wins right before you head into the tournament. Best of luck. Safe travels. Go Lady Vols. And we'll see you here on Monday.